This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Put Timothy Chalamet and today's guest Anna Perrott in a room together and I reckon I know who would come out on top. Anna Perrott is one of New Zealand's finest opera singers and one of my oldest friends. And she's here today, amongst other reasons, to set the record straight about the future of opera and its relevance to the next generation. Welcome to Tell Me Moya, where the chats are candid, the laughs are loud, and nothing is off limits. I'm Harriet Moya, and each episode I'm sitting down with brilliant women, or people who identify as women, for no filter and no nonsense chats about, well, pretty much anything. Real, relatable, and at times raucous, Tell Me Moya dives right into the conversations we want to have but don't have time for, and the ones we don't want to have but we know we should. Strap in. Are you ready for Tell Me Moya? Season 1 of Tell Me Moya kicks off quite simply with a collection of conversations with 8 interesting women I know, and I've known today's guest for longer than either of us care to admit. Anna Perrott is one of the most versatile, musical, and genuinely connected sopranos in the country. And when I say connected, I mean it in all the ways. Her luscious voice, commitment to storytelling, and undeniable musicality connect her emotionally with her audiences. She's deeply connected to music with a long family lineage, and it is her ability to connect with people that see her at the forefront of several organisations that are nurturing, inspiring, and mentoring future generations of world-class singers right out of Napier, Aotearoa. To my darling Anna, thank you so much for coming on to Tell Me Moya today. I'm so excited to see your face.
Gosh, well, pull yourself together, Harriet. that kind of introduction obviously makes me feel massively uncomfortable. I was hoping to just relax for the next hour.
Well, if we want to just sort of humanise things a bit, and to our listeners, Anna did tell me that she just was in her pyjamas up until about 30 seconds before the interview, and that is much more the Anna that I know. Yes.
Appreciate that.
We met a really long time ago when we were singing together in the New Zealand Secondary Students Choir, and I kind of took a guess that this might have been about 93, 94, maybe. Am I on the right track?
I'm not great with dates.
No, in the moment. A very long time ago. And then we sang in the National Youth Choir together. We became very firm friends. You're one of those people, you know, when you look back over your life and you think, now, where was I when the Twin Towers came down? And where was I when the mosque shooting happened? For us, it was, where was I when I learned
Lady Di. SPQR.
Yeah, on Ponsonby Road. And we passed like a dairy, I think. Or did we hear someone talking about it? Was that?
I can't remember how we became in the know. I just remember. That moment. Not least because of your obsession with Prince William.
At the time, which hasn't aged well. Let's move on past that. Basically, we've been in and out of each other's lives here and there ever since. I think I remember visiting you in London at one stage. And essentially what has happened these days is that we basically just engineer professional circumstances so that we can catch up with each other and hang out. And this is just another really good example of one of those.
It's become an expertise, hasn't it? That is definitely how I roll. You've got to enjoy who you're engaging with.
I was just going to say it's about surrounding yourself with people that you vibe with, isn't it? Because we don't always get that luxury. No, especially in the arts, but I actually reckon it's across the board.
Children.
Who would work with children, let alone teenagers?
I'd work with yours.
Oh, well, I would work with yours also. But we're obviously not too put off by them, or maybe we're just suckers for punishment because we both worked a wee bit with teenagers, far more than me over the last few years, but we'll get to that. I kind of was thinking about with these professionally engineered circumstances, how we've both always had a touch of the hustle, about us. And I was thinking back to when we used to do garden, like garden concerts at your place, in your parents' place in Napier. Yep. And then I'd drag you over to Auckland to do like restaurant opera nights. Yeah. So I guess we've both always had that desire to make opera really fun and accessible to just general audiences. Mm. Is that something that you still feel like is really important to you now?
Yeah. I think it's also making it real. Like when I think about our experiences together and the Soprano Showdown that we did in Shed 2.
Iconic. Iconic.
And the problem of actually making eye contact when you're singing for a singing duet. And you can't, you know, it's just...
Especially when you've charged the princely sum of $12 for the concert.
Yeah, that was a steal. Some numpties turned on some music upstairs. They need to get with the program and read the
book. Speaking of teenagers.
Yeah. Sorry.
Unless it's your husband, of course, in which case he's also a numpty.
Yeah. But the reality is that it's Barbershop. It's definitely my son.
Oh my God. Your son, does he listen to Barbershop?
Yeah.
Is he in a barbershop quartet?
He is. He was at school. He came home from school yesterday and his choir director said, I've been given a compliment, Mum. And I said, oh, yeah. He said, yeah. My teacher said, did you listen to that recording yesterday, Javier? You were sounding really good. You're only in this choir. I only put up with you because you've got a good voice.
I love it how
he saw it as a compliment. And I think that he's probably, that's a little bit of Mum that he's got right there.
Oh, yeah, I'd say so. Oh, my God, so, that's so cute.
Yeah, but don't you think, like, creating these projects and singing in those moments, it's actually permission to be who we are and to, you know, we're doing something that's important, but we don't have to conceal who we are. We don't just become another character. We can, I'm really drawn to still being who I am.
And that authenticity. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And when you take opera out of the really formal settings or the traditional settings and put it somewhere a bit different, and you're engaging with the audience and you're catching each other's eye and cracking each other up, then they're all in on that as well, and it just becomes that much more relatable, doesn't it, for them? It helps make the stories more relatable. So recently-ish, like in the last couple of years, I have come to Napier to work with you and some beautiful young people from the Project Prima Volta organisation. You are also going to come to Dunedin later this year to run a transformational breath workshop at We Treat, which I'll talk a little bit more about later on. And I just wanted to say how incredible I find that work that you do with those young people. But I've actually realised that I completely forgot to ask you the question that I'm supposed to be asking everyone when I interview them this first season. And that is, Anna Perard, do you think that women can have it all?
It's really not an easy question. I used to think about it a lot when I was a lot younger, and I had this very, very strong belief that I could. And I think what having that belief gave me is certainty during a period of development, you know, where you're sort of deciding who you want to be in the world. I was like, I can have it all, therefore I feel rounded and full and enough, and, you know, sort of drive me in that direction of self-assessment, which is kind of good, really. But
well, it probably gave you a kind of a naive confidence.
Which obviously eventually is stripped away and then rebuilt in reality.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think that our needs are actually very basic. Our needs are very basic, and I think that having it all for me is having the sort of choices that I want to have in life. If someone looked from the outside in, you know, and they saw the state of my garden and they saw the state of my house, whatever, I think having it all is actually being able to choose.
Sure, being able to have the choice.
Yeah, being able to have the choice. So I do think that I have it all. I actually do. Yeah.
Okay, that's really interesting. That's a totally different perspective to what we've had before, and I love that. It's not necessarily literally having it all. Mm. It's about having the ability to choose what your priorities are. That for you feels like you've got it all.
Yeah. And this is really linked into like autonomy.
Mm.
So having autonomy, I think, because I think people feel that financial wherewithal gives you autonomy, or that or relationships give you all sorts of different things, that you can source it from all sorts of different places. And that's one of the reasons, just to tie it back, that I love working for rangatahi, is the fact that having a sense of autonomy is so critical for them.
Yes.
It's so often the case that they do not.
That they don't.
Yeah. And so, you know, we started the organisation during a really tough period in Hawke's Bay. It was, there were cluster suicides. It was like a postcode lottery. It wasn't a symptom of a particular way of living or a particular
demographic or community.
It was like across the board, and I think that was what was so compelling about it, or compelling me to act, is that there were young people, and continue to be. It's not something we've been able to shift the dial on so much, because there are forces way more powerful than ours.
Yeah,
mainly because they're better resourced. but you know, we're in the moment. If you don't really care whether or not you live or die, there's a massive problem if that's framed or there's not a sort of construct of being able to make choices around that. Aside from that,
sure.
That sounds pretty good. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I knew from being on stage and being myself and flying and laughing with you and expressing who I was, that often in performance I wouldn't care. Life beyond that moment was not relevant to the moment I was in.
Yeah.
And so in my sort of basic bitch way, I just sort of translate that as being not, I don't didn't really care if I live or died coming off stage.
Okay.
You know, that sort of flow state, right?
Yeah.
When you've actually done your work and memorized your lines, you don't
come off the stage going, please let the earth gobble me up right now and I want to end it all because I did not prepare myself properly for that. Yeah.
It's generally about preparation, eh?
Oh, really? Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Or bluffing. But the reality is for me that was really, it's a really strong feeling. And so this autonomy thing, I think, philosophically, that's probably why we work in this sector, because we just believe that actually music and singing and sort of having autonomy over your body, you know, charging your body full of breath, oxygenating all those organs and supporting the gas exchange and everything like that. It just does make you feel good, but it also makes you feel powerful, and it addresses a lack of kind of daily experience of having autonomy for young people.
Yeah, and because my experience of working with these lovely young people that you foster and develop is that there's also this really, really generous sense of belonging that they gain from being a part of something. And so we should backtrack a little bit because so you were studying in London, that's where you met your husband, you spent some time in Amsterdam. So tell us quickly, just briefly, about when you met Jose? Because I seem to recall like you were both third years. You were quite good friends at first, but there was some kind of...
Not really.
Oh, not really. You just were like, who's this jumped up little Spanish?
He was such a tease. Exactly right. I did, you know, he's the sort of person that would race after you after a performance in recital class, and he'd have a printout of the song that you'd sung, even though it's not in his repertoire.
Oh, think, God, you know? Oh, yeah, God, what?
Disgusting.
A twat.
And you'd have like notated it and like written down little suggestions or adjustments.
Oh, that some feedback. Feedback. Because I seem to remember him like accosting you in a hallway or something and just being like, oh,
exactly
look.
Right.
That just in case you want whether you wanted some feedback or not, I've got some for you.
Yeah.
Wow. No. And I mean, married that man.
Yeah, I know. I can't get my head around it. But I must not have alienated him, but every part of me now feels like I would have spat back at him. You are my colleague.
Yeah, like what are you thinking?
What's going on? Really interesting, but when we were at Guildhall, they did foster that peer-to-peer kind of feedback, I think, but he fucking leaned in.
Yeah, some people took it to the nth degree, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I'd be like, I've got some feedback. I loved your boots. They were gorgeous. Like, your outfit, on point. That's the kind of feedback I'd be giving. But no, Jose's like, have you considered, like, a more open R vowel on the, oh, my God. Wow. But we love him, and he's an incredibly talented musician and conductor. And so you met Jose, together you went to Amsterdam for about 4 years.
Mm. Well, he was in National Opera Studio in London. I went to Amsterdam to study, and he got quite bored, actually, at National Opera Studio, because they were basically teaching singers how to read the music and all that sort of thing. And as you can tell, if anyone who comes up and wants to give you, you know, useful advice as a peer, he obviously did have, you know, we're reaping the benefits of that incredible expertise and experience. But he got very bored very quickly in various settings. So that's another reason why he enjoys creating and making here in New Zealand.
Yeah. I want to talk about what made you both decide to move back to New Zealand, but I'm just going to take a wee moment to hear from our sponsor.
Okay.
Looking to make your next property move in Dunedin? Call the team that lives and breathes property. At NZ Property Solutions, we're 100% locally owned, packed with worldwide property experience, bold ideas, and serious property market know-how. We're passionate, connected, and yes, we love a good laugh too. Ready for a cracking result? Call the team at NZ Property Solutions today and let's get you moving. 0800 22 96 55.
Thank you so much to Denise Casey and the team at New Zealand Property Solutions for sponsoring this very first season of Tell Me Moya. Now back to Anna and Jose, but more specifically Anna, of course, and your decision to move back to New Zealand after studying in Amsterdam. Yeah. So what made you both decide to chuck it all in and come home?
Pregnancy.
Knocked up. Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Yeah, right. Just wanted to be.
And it was Jose that decided. Yeah, I sort of had to cancel a year's work. And I found that really hard. But you don't know when a Spaniard is going to decide again that New Zealand is the place for him. You know, they're the least, you know, they've got the least number of passports per head of population, second only to the States.
Right. They love home. Yeah.
It's still legitimate.
Mm. So, like, he wants to go now, strike while the iron's hot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and, just to ask a relatively personal question, was that a planned pregnancy? Like, you said that you had work. Yes. Like, it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And because I didn't know any different, I didn't know that children could be disruptive to your workflow at that point.
Right. Right. So. Oh, weren't we all just so blissfully naive about taking children to work? Oh my God. Yeah. And all of that, just lack of sleep, etc., ability to function as a human, as an adult, totally. Oh, how what we had still to learn ahead of us. So you moved back to Napier, because that's where you're from, that's where much of your family is from, which are, I should add, just like an incredibly gifted, talented musical family for generations. I could list all of their accolades and what they all do, but we don't have time. So they're amazing, and you've come from an incredibly musical background. One quick question, was it ever possible that you might not have pursued music? Like, was there ever an option for you?
No, probably not.
No.
I mean, no. I like writing and stuff. No.
Let's face it, absolutely not. Not really. Okay, so you move back and you move to Napier and you start a family, and what are you doing for work? I read somewhere that Jose was Manuel in the Fawlty Towers theatre restaurant or something.
There was at Peak House at Tomato Peak. There was a long-standing kind of arts experience, actually, where people would hold Fawlty Towers evenings
serve restaurant
goers, and he just stopped that one day very abruptly, walked out on the job actually because he cut someone's tie as Manuel.
Yeah.
And the person picked him up. He was a rugby player.
Oh.
Picked him up and carried him outside. And so that felt probably quite an affront.
Yeah, a bit of line crossing, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's fine if you as the actor are picking up the guests and carrying them outside. That's fine.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. But well, that's what around. People buy into, right? But yeah.
Exactly.
I think it was probably his first interaction with the sort of underbelly of
Kiwi culture.
Problematic culture.
Yeah.
But anyway, less about Jose.
Yeah, I know. I keep thinking, oh, my God, quick, back to Anna. So, like, in the name of time, let's skip to talking about, I don't know what came first. Did Festival Opera come first? So we
knew, and together with another mutual friend, Sarah Walmsley, we'd kind of always wanted to open a cafe together, and Jose and I had come back to Hawke's Bay. She was living overseas. We'd sort of taken stock of what was happening in the community, and also recognised with, you know, a rather bleak outlook when it came to actually using our own skills locally, and probably that was rammed home by the Tomato Peak house
experience. Yeah.
And so,
So
then we went along to a New Zealand Opera production of Madame Butterfly, and we also went and caught up with Opera Hawke's Bay and talked to them a little bit about, you know, maybe a board role or something like that. And they contracted Jose to do an opera for Opera Hawke's Bay. It was La Traviata in the Opera House. It was the last one in the Opera House.
To conduct or to direct?
Yeah.
Conduct.
Well, to conduct, but basically he had to also stage direct and build the set and build the concept, and
it
was basically here you go, will you do this, here's a stipend,
oh my God,
of modest proportions. And really, I think just because the timing was really great, because we were just, you know, there was such a lack of a professional stimulation here. Although when we did fly out from Spain to move here, Ava Maria was 5 weeks old, and I went and did APO Madame Butterfly seeing Suzuki. And basically. And I remember being so fascinated by the fact that as soon as I, like, a new baby, okay, life changing.
Yeah.
But as soon as I got in the taxi to go to the rehearsal hall, she didn't exist.
I sometimes experience that. It's really interesting, isn't it? And then you like remember.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh, right, that's right. And then you feel guilty that it's that
skill that enables you to have it all. I really feel guilty, Harriet.
You really feel guilty. Yeah, that's true. You need to not feel guilty in order to be able to have it all, feel like you've got it all. Yeah.
So basically Jose was in this position where, because of his particular skills plus our circumstance, like, he wasn't really working. We had a new baby, and we ended up doing a lot, you know, applying for visas for artists that he thought are friends of ours to come and bring them up to sing in that opera. And then that organisation sort of didn't fold because of that opera, but basically the opera house shut down because it needed to be strengthened, and they sort of folded. But we just sort of thought, shit, I mean,
there's an opportunity here.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
And look, I think the people in Hawke's Bay, young people in Hawke's Bay, I had this really significant experience when I was fundraising to go overseas to Guildhall, and I went down to Te Tai Whenua or Here Taonga in Napier, and we, together with a friend, we were also fundraising together, asked for those some young guys who were not in school to come and be extras in a fundraising concert. And I was so profoundly affected by what they brought, the mana, the wairua, this kind of like, right. I'd never experienced anything like it, actually, not in my kind of, you know, Napier Boys High, Napier Girls High.
Sheltered, exactly.
I had never experienced.
So they sang? They didn't sing.
One was, you know, a dying man in my arms. One was a Roman centurion.
And just like extras. Your silent night, like, what do they call them? Non-playing characters or something.
Yeah.
But
so I think when you bring a sense of reverence to something like that, it lives with the person forever.
Yes.
And when you introduced things, I know I'm going around in circles, but when you introduced us, I was thinking, now what is it that I know that Harriet brought to the interactions that she had with these participants in PPV that makes me recognize the value that will live in them forever? And it is respect. It's respect.
Right. Okay.
You don't come into that space, and a reverence for the interactions that you have. And I think that I probably first experienced that properly, instead of, you know, me soaring away on my viola and the teacher and mum saying, you're flat. And,
yeah,
you know,
there's a
lot of reverence around this beautiful thing that we got to access.
Sure. Okay.
Clearly, I realised that for many of them, it would have been their first contact with classical music.
Yes, this is a big thing, because this is the same for a lot of the kids that you are looking after, right?
Yeah. And so you don't forget something like that. And I don't know what my expectations were, but you know, I tend to blithely go in without any expectations sometimes. So anyway, so go overseas, come back to Hawke's Bay, and recognise that that energy, that reverence and that opportunity is sitting here in Hawke's Bay.
Yeah, right.
And so I think the intersection of those kinds of happenings of Jose, of us suddenly realizing that actually we could administrate and deliver an opera with very minimal support, with a new baby, it just sort of made us think, let's start something. So then I rang Sarah and said, you know, that cafe we wanted to open, let's do this instead.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it worked. And the timeline's a little bit squeezed because obviously we actually had our second child by the time that we started Festival Opera and PVCT. But that, it's one vision. It's one vision. It's
very quickly in a nutshell explain then what's Festival Opera and what is then PVCT, like they're under the same vision, but what are they specifically? Yeah. Just for our listeners who don't know.
Yeah. So definitely opera as a tool for well-being. So basically our vision is that opera is a tool to support well-being of individuals, of households, of communities. And it's, we've sort of taken it upon ourselves to understand, to learn and understand what happens when we offer that, when we offer that generously. So take away all the obstacles.
All the barriers,
All the barriers, and give a community an opportunity to kind of care about something that they have not grown up with.
Yes.
And so that's the sort of basis of why we deliver how we do. And Festival Opera running, you know, been running for 13 years. Festival Opera has had a series of sort of bumps with COVID, you know, having to reschedule and cancel. Cyclone was a biggie.
Yes, huge.
And just coming back from those sorts of things is really, really challenging. So, but the purpose of Festival Opera is really to give Project Prima Volta, who rehearse weekly, they have one-to-one singing lessons.
These are teens. These are teenagers.
Teenagers, sorry. Yeah, sort of a age sort of 13 to 18, 14 to 18. And then a PPV junior program as well, which is less intensive, less contact. Music theory, all of those things to help get them ready so that they can participate in an annual festival opera as members of the chorus and perhaps single line voices and that sort of thing. So that model
Perfect.
sort of worked really well across 10 years, and then it's just become just impossible to fund, really. A half a
For
million budget
sure.
for Hawke's Bay for four opera performances is not, you know, and I think so we're just on strategic pause at the moment and looking to reactivate Festival Opera in 2028.
Because it's not like these operas are not well supported by the community, are they? Like you, they
I
do
think
well
they
sales wise, yeah.
I think they do. They do. And the community loves that it's happening. But,
Yes.
you know, also there's a lot of competing demands on people's attention, which
Yep.
I recognize. And I actually, like you, love the hustle of needing to understand actually what people want and making sure that I want what they want at the same
And
time.
of course, practically, you cannot produce an opera of a particular standard with professional singers, just based on love and enthusiasm alone, can you?
Exactly, exactly. So year one budget was 14,000, and Romeo and Juliet, which we delivered in 2023, was, is that right?
Couple of years after COVID, yeah, 2 or 3, yeah.
Or 2022, maybe the year before the cyclone. That was, is that right? Was the cyclone 2022?
23, I think.
Okay, sorry. That was a half a million dollar budget, and
Yep.
our accommodation for international artists alone, because the model is that PPV sing in the chorus
Yep.
along with adult community members, but international artists come from overseas. So friends of ours or recommendations, people that kind of want to hang out in New Zealand for a little while, but also who,
But also,
who,
you use Kiwi
yeah,
professionals
also,
as well. But often you will bring in a big name or something.
yeah.
So
But
that
that,
you
yeah, but
can
those
deliver
costs,
to a certain standard, right?
So yeah, that's
So that,
basically how
yeah,
it
that's PPV and that's
operates.
Festival Opera in a nutshell. We'll come to the National Youth Opera Aotearoa, which is your new baby. We'll get to that. But so, as we mentioned earlier, with these young people coming to this program who maybe have, they might be musical, they obviously have an interest in singing of some description, but they're potentially being exposed to an art form and a world that's associated with that that they have never, ever had anything to do with in the past. I mean, some of them will have, some of them will have grown up playing the piano or whatever, but for a lot of them it's new. So there's a really, you talk about the responsibility that you have to prepare these young singers for the real world and the real opera environment. Now that's kind of if you're looking at kids who are taking it quite seriously and looking at progressing, but even from that entry level, it's like, how do you introduce these kids to something that's so new, and make it relate to, make it accessible enough that they can feel at home there, that they don't feel like completely out of place. And I know
Well,
we played around with some of that when the work that we did with them, but it's, you know, kids don't even necessarily know about rehearsal etiquette and all of those things. So I guess it's like, do you see this as the way of, yeah, just showing them all of that stuff?
Earth by fire,
Yeah.
and obviously in a sort of well-considered, sequenced, program. There's no way they'd arrive in the hot seat at the rate of knots that they do in our program,
No, right.
but really, they're that. What does that tell them about how they can live their lives? That they need everything clear, that they need all the information, that they need the
Yep.
right sequence of steps. And it's not real life.
No.
So it is actually good to reinforce this idea that as a young person, you are capable of way more than you get.
Yep.
And there is a universal rule that if you do support that young people, you do make sure that the environment is nurturing, but then you give them something really hard to do.
Yeah,
It
sure.
they will stretch for that goal and they'll achieve it. And they'll learn so much about themselves. And so actually the dynamic, the environment of kind of I like to it's not that I do this deliberately, but I do not conceal when I make errors. I don't con you know, if I like sometimes because I cook each week for PPV and I often burn
Yep.
it. Or something's inedible and I'm just like, well, I wouldn't eat it, but give it a go. The point is
Yeah.
that I've made an effort, but I do
But
want
that
them
you're
to see
also
real.
fallible, yeah, and real. Yep,
Exactly. And that
exactly.
doesn't stop me from having this burning ambition to lead, to explore who I am through creating opportunities and opportunities for me to collaborate, but opportunities for others to collaborate and learn in this world. It doesn't hold me back. And I think that in the age of sort of extreme kids with extreme anxiety and
Yeah.
perfectionist traits and things like that,
I
it
think the
probably makes
idea
me feel
of
uncomfortable to be around, but
teaching the idea of taking imperfect action, I think is really, really beneficial. Yeah. So I'm just gonna hear from our sponsors again at New Zealand Property Solutions.
Looking to make your next property move in Dunedin? Call the team that lives and breathes property. At NZ Property Solutions, we're 100% locally owned, packed with worldwide property experience, bold ideas, and serious property market know-how. We're passionate, connected, and yes, we love a good laugh too. Ready for a cracking result? Call the team at NZ Property Solutions today and let's get you moving. 0800 229655.
So, you talked about the fact that you cook for these kids once a week, and we haven't really touched on some of the barriers that there are for a lot of these kids, even just in terms of being involved in the program, which, as I understand it, is free. Yeah, so it's amazing. So straight away, we don't have that barrier, which is awesome. But it's more than that, isn't it? It's like you've got kids who maybe don't have transport. You've got kids who have responsibilities to their family that they have to uphold. You've got kids who may have to work and that interferes with rehearsal schedules. You've got kids who might be hungry. You've got kids who might not have a smart shirt when you've got to turn up for a concert. So, like other, I mean, are they like other example, are there any sort of particular examples that you can think of that might be like give people an idea of the sort of barriers that you are?
I think sort of peer pressure or perception from peers about what obviously my son doesn't seem to suffer from that with his
With his barbershop.
barbershop,
He's
which
his
that's because
dad's
it's so normalized.
son, that's for sure.
But I think it is, peer perception.
Yep.
But also parents are quite afraid of what the future holds and the with AI and all of that sort of thing, how their children should be spending their time. And I think, so households not sort of appreciating the dearth of skills that you can develop through this kind of activity
Yeah.
in terms of communication, sales,
Yep.
learn how to engage with an audience. So
So
many
many
skills.
transferable skills. Yeah,
So
totally.
I think the barriers are often about perception,
Yep, sure.
and obviously those sort of physiological barriers. But Maslow's hierarchy of needs has always been a little bit profoundly problematic for me because, we've had participants who've been homeless,
Yep.
who've had a parent who is a gambling addict, and for this reason, a gambler, and for this reason, they've been couch surfing, and they come so that obviously their physiological needs are not being met in the slightest,
At
no
all,
refrigerator
yeah.
in the house, and they come to PPV, and they can belong in that space and be normal and sort of do what I not quite what I did with my daughter, forgetting that she existed,
Yeah.
but there's an element
Bit
of
of
that. There's obviously
escapism, yeah.
There's obviously a connection there to how
Yeah.
something so enthralling, so involving, and demanding
Yeah.
of you can just provide the distraction that you need from the reality that you're wading through. So I think, yeah, that's the sort of extreme end of the kind of barriers to access. And as you were sort of talking about it, I was thinking it's so nuanced, you know, when you observe a kid in an audition. So every kid and for PPB auditions, they have to sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. And actually the process is that Jose and I guess we're a good team, right? That's just dawned on me. And also PPV grads who come in and sit in on those auditions and work with us, like Leela Crichton, for example, who's just this massive superstar now.
Yes.
We observe. You're just literally observing. And I think it's a recognition of, you know, of what that student can communicate to us about whether or not they need the experience of PPV.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really care about the quality of voice because we know that that can be worked on. We've resourced that development.
Yeah.
We just want to see a flicker of interest, like holding the eye contact, a kind of reverence for what's going on in the moment. And then that person will invariably get in, you know. It might mean we're soprano heavy. Who isn't?
Exactly. And so you've got had some incredible success stories of young singers who've come through the program who are now out there in the world, just like you just mentioned, just achieving phenomenally on the world stage. And that must be so rewarding for you. That just must be deeply, I mean, it must be rewarding in all kinds of different ways, but that must be one way in which it's like, we gave that kid the stepping stone into this world.
I think they give us a lot. Back. I think that this is not documented how much we have received. And I'm not talking about being able to sort of forge a career or whatever, but the learning that I have had access to as a result of what these young singers have chosen to share through their journey with PPV. And is, you know, that is, I find that really inspiring. So we get more than we give. And I'm glad you didn't use the word pride, because that is definitely not what I feel. I don't feel any pride. I don't understand the concept. It's weird. My parents didn't use that word with us. But I feel this kind of excitement.
Yes, I understand.
And so it is rewarding. It's rewarding because you've both invested, and that investment is playing out. So
totally.
It's
people, it's not even on the same scale by any stretch, but these retreats that I run on Quarantine Island twice a year, the Women's Empowerment Retreat, and people are always saying to me, gosh, you must be so proud, or like what happens over that weekend. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just this massively equal thing. Like my bucket gets filled so much just by watching these beautiful transformations, and they can be tiny. It can be tiny little changes that women take home and apply to their lives, or it can be huge, big, like reveal, like massive life-changing experience for some people. And it's both of those are equally as precious and amazing. And
can change the course of history, right?
Yeah, for someone. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so can you share, is there a particular example of a transformation that you could share with us that you've seen, big or small, where you've just been that it's made you, given you your goosebumps and made you just feel really privileged to be a part of it? I mean, you will have had dozens.
Yeah, I mean, they are numerous, I have to say. I know how that
prolific
sounds.
Prolific.
Yeah. But I think there's one student who refused to accept that he could do what we could all see he could do.
Mm-hmm.
And the shift for him has been, you know, he lives in Heretanga. He is working. He is, has a full life. But he needed a lot of understanding from us, because we knew what he was up against, and a lot of it was his perception of what he was entitled to on this earth.
Right.
And I think that for him, like talking about how, you know, the change shift can be big or little. What he kind of understood about PPV and his experience was that people would go out on a limb for him, that he was worthy of that. That yes, like there was one day we had a rehearsal and he should have been there and he wasn't, and you know, he was sort of in the care of SIFs for a while, and so we, you know, the pickup schedule was challenging.
Yeah.
And sometimes we didn't know who it was. So what we understood on this particular day is that Jose, who was supposed to be conducting the rehearsal, needed to go and get him. And we knew that he'd come if Jose did. So I think it's about communicating to kids that they are important and significant. Oh. And the thing I love about your retreats and things like this, and my own experience of working with breath and dedicating my attention and reverence to somebody, is the worthiness that it makes people feel it needs to be sought and found. It needs to be sought in every interaction, I think, with people. It needs to be, you know.
Yeah, and it's so interesting how so many of us lack that or are desperately, and that sometimes that's circumstantial, sometimes it's just who we are, all of those things, but that desperate sense of belonging and you are important to someone. And I guess that's actually something, this is we could talk about this for ages, but that's something as a single person, that idea of like not having that one person who's your person and the person who's invested in you and interested in you and supportive of you. And so finding other ways to have that, not from a romantic partner kind of thing. So, but it's really important. And we're rapidly running out of time. And I did want to ask you, so aside from PPV and Festival Opera, you've now launched the National Youth Opera Aotearoa. So can you really quickly tell us about that? Because we want to talk about the breath work too.
Yeah, absolutely. So Festival Opera on strategic pause until 1 January 2027, so that we could orient our team to be able to establish National Youth Opera. And the purpose of that platform is to, through three residencies across a year, is to work with a select group of young artists who are on that pathway rather than some teenagers who are at high school and haven't necessarily decided to be singers. Who are on that pathway, and try and help ensure that they have access to the kind of training that's real world training that they need, and the opportunity to sing two roles, an opera in concert and a role in a fully staged opera. Yeah. And the reality is it doesn't really matter how many competitions you win in New Zealand.
Yeah.
If you haven't sung a role, you're not going to get to sing a role.
No, right.
So actually what young people need the opportunity to do, young singers, is to have a role on their CV to sort of make the sort of headway that will matter when they head overseas, which is a bit of an inevitability. Yes.
And for me, in my day, that it still exists, of course, was the Opera Factory in Auckland, in which I got to sing several roles. And so by the time I left, I could have, you know, named a number of roles that I'd already sung. Yep. And you're quite right. It's like A++ in the exams in the world, like uni exams. It's kind of it's that real world application, practical experience that you need to get. Because there's so much, like learning a role from start to finish is just huge. Yeah, fabulous.
And so there's that, but there's also how do you manage it? So we're developing a donor recipient engagement framework to help young people manage donor relationships.
Amazing.
You know, it can be really fraught.
Very treacherous can be, yeah.
So all of that. So just looking at what we've understood after this many years in the profession and what we can. And that just, it's been really great to work with 20-year-olds.
And that's available to young singers from across the country, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the national reach. So we're really enjoying it. Love it. Love the time that we spend with them. And it's exciting when everybody wants to be in the room and gives everything they've got. So,
So lovely. And lovely for you. Yeah.
I was just going to say, importantly, like for me, the proviso for sort of getting in behind that is to start to introduce, you know, self-regulation practice and just an understanding of how the voice and breath work can support a healthy career.
Yes. Yeah. So this is something that's really, really huge for you mm-hmm. and been a big part of your kind of journey, for want of a better word, just discovering this transformational breathwork stuff, which we're really excited to have you come and run a workshop at the next retreat. But I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit about it. Like, where are you, how did you come across it? Where are you with your training?
So I came across it because I went to a Pechacucha. Do you know what that format is? Yes.
I went
to a Pechacucha, met someone, and I was talking about extreme singing and using these, you know, different, you know, people yodeling across a fjord and papahaka, examples of extreme singing in the Pechacucha. And someone, and this woman, Helen Mortensen Thompson's husband, was there and said to me, "You must meet my wife. She's a Danish breath practitioner and she would love to meet you." And I met with her and I've never been so convinced of someone's, of the, you know, of the deep truth of
their message.
And I think the reality is that the thing that we mess with all the time is our breath. It absorbs, you know, it's like the shock absorber, and it diverts our natural breath pattern into something that stymies our good health. I don't know if that's how you'd describe it. Probably not. In reality, it sounds a bit weird. It just affects our flow. You know, when you sing operatically in that extreme and you activate the body in that way, I think part of the magic to getting that feeling of flow is actually what's happening with the breath. You know, we talk about exercises, you know, having a high, but I don't think people are really boiling it down to, well, what are the mechanics of exercise that get us to that point? Do you feel like a high when you lift weights, or is it when you're actually pumping that breath a lot?
I'd never thought of it like that.
So I'm fascinated. I was fascinated to learn about the significance of diaphragmatic breathing from her.
Yeah.
When I thought I knew all about it.
Yeah. Right.
And I knew nothing. I knew nothing.
Huh.
So I've been totally schooled, and I'm totally convinced by this breath practice as offering something to everybody who wants to optimize their life, basically.
And so is it something that you have to practice every day? Are you doing it all the time?
I think you have to practice breath awareness.
Yes.
You have to know what your breath is doing.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like an errant limb or something. Yeah.
Yes. So
I think it's about being aware. It's like sort of, you know, being aware of cars on the road or whatever.
I've become much more of aware of it since developing the voice disorder, obviously, because sometimes it does affect my respiratory system. But even recovering from trauma and stuff, really honing in on breath played a big part in that for me, that recovery. But I'm certainly intrigued to learn more about it from you. So can't wait to have you here in October, my darling. Look, we have absolutely run out of time, unfortunately, but I'm just in awe of your generosity. Always, like, not just for these kids, but just always in life. You're always there, always ready to lift other people up, bring them with you. And I just love that about you. I treasure our friendship and treasure you very, very much. So thank you for coming and chatting with us today.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. So easy. Just like you.
That is a whole nother episode, right? So you've been listening to Anna Perard in conversation with Harriet Moyer on Tell Me Moyer. For more information about Anna and her programs, you can go to www.nyoa.co.nz or www.festivalopera.co.nz, or you can follow them on Facebook or Instagram, National Youth Opera Aotearoa or Festival Opera New Zealand. And for more information about my shows and shenanigans, you can follow me on Instagram or Facebook, Harriet Moyer, Entertainer MC. You've been listening to Tell Me Moyer, where the conversations with women are brave, bold, and occasionally make you clutch your pearls in a good way. Heard something that made you gasp, giggle, or immediately text your group chat? Don't worry, we've got you. You can replay this episode or dive into more colourful conversations at oar.org.nz or find us on your favourite podcast platform. For more information about my shows and shenanigans, follow me on Instagram and Facebook, Harriet Moyer, Entertainer MC. Thanks so much to Denise Casey and the legends at New Zealand Property Solutions for their tremendous support. Now, go on, hit subscribe. You know you want to.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.